Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sports In Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also, you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports In Depth.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
More like rain madness or summer madness. But we'll take it as it means a lower temperature. Because in the ensuing days that have passed, I came back from Brazil. It was cold. No. It was freezing. We're getting some more rain today. Which should make for a warmer day. Doc Stanley Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network Live. Back in New York from our Bronx office, going out to Queens. Queens office with Dusty, talk some boxing, and mention some other things here. Oh, that was all we do, though. Greatest male gospel singer of all time, and one of the greatest R&B singers of all time, and who was in some ways ahead of his time. Little plug for Brazil. Sam Cooke, who lead us in him of his garment. We'll say a prayer, and me and Dusty will talk boxing. Hoping that others will join us, NFL Ed, and a few others. Let's do this plug first. Come on back. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Loved and answered by Rooney and Larry. Man, people of that caliber say things of you. It humbles you. Show the bless you all.
A Rádio Pajeú é o mundo todo. Fala, Stanley, direto dos Estados Unidos.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
E eu moro em Nova York.
Eu moro em Nova York.
Nos Estados Unidos.
Nos Estados Unidos.
E estou ouvindo Radio Web Pajeú.
Estou ouvindo a Rádio Web Pajeú.
Um abraço.
Um abraço.
Hugs. God bless you.
Deus abençoe você.
Eita, menino, quer dizer que agora é internacional, é?
Yes. Ué.
She heard my Jesus was passing by, so she joined.
the gathering throng, and while she was pushing her way through, someone asked her, what are you trying to do? She said, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I know I'll be made whole. She cried, she had no more to spare. The doctors, they done all they could, but their medicine would do no good. When she touched him, the Savior didn't see, but still he turned around and cried, somebody touch me. She said, it was I who just wanna touch the hem of your garment. I know I'll be made whole right now. She stood there crying, oh, 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 and oh, 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 oh. Said if I could just touch the hem of your garment, I know I'll be made whole right now.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
And we open with a prayer. And you know, I usually have so many on my thing here. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will your way. Last night, laying down, this morning, getting up. Waking up with clothes on our back, shoes on our feet, food on our table. Thankful that a debt that wasn't made was paid, so that we may have the right to the tree of life. Bless our beloved family. Our family here on Sports and Deb, Dusty, and Junebug, the memories of Mel Cosell, Lady A. And we just thank you, Lord. In your holy name, amen. Dr. Andy, Sports and Deb, Blocks, at Radio Social Gallery Network. Dusty gave me a call and say, you know, hey, let's get it rolling. Let's do something here. And we started out with, you talked about the possibility of Spence, Crawford too, and then you said the possibility of them fighting Charlo. Yeah. And we concur that Spence Crawford too would be a bigger financial reward for Crawford. But at the other hand, you were saying Spence is talking about he wants a 154. Crawford says it's 147. Crawford's a champ. Does he? It's 147 or it doesn't happen.
Yeah, he's a champ at 47. He's a champ at 40. He owns all titles in those two weight classifications, and he owns a 35 or portion of it anyway. So that makes him the marquee guy in a sense. But you're telling me that the bigger money fight pay per view will be him, a rematch of Spence. You know, it makes sense. But then again, I'm still in the cloud because when he's 47. Then he's challenging the twice beaten Charlo, who is one of the best junior middleweights in the world, who knocked out Cestaño. And his only derailment was that Mark lost to Mark Harrison, and then of course his beating of the beating he took from Canelo, which was kind of low, but he was intimidated. I mean, with all due respect to him, he's intimidated. He knew he was up against an animal like Canelo. But still in all, he looked good. And so I would assume that since Crawford is probably doing what Canelo's doing, challenging upscale, it would be a bigger money fight. But maybe you're right. I mean, the Spence rematch that they talked about right at the post-fight conference might be the bigger match. Who knows?
You know, what you're saying here, too, is you're in the cloud because you won't fight Spencer at 154, which is a bigger money fight, but you'll fight Charlo at 154, which be less money per se, but at the same time, that's the easier fight. that he must be much willing to your fight.
Exactly, and that's probably what it is. You know, he probably knows. Let's put it this way. Let's be analytical here. He probably knows that Spence moving up to 54 might be stronger than him. And, you know, it's like an oxymoron assumption. And although Charlo moved up to 68 to fight Canelo, going down, he might not be as weight challenging to Crawford as Spence coming up. You see what I'm saying?
And the bottom line, too. And the bottom line, you're too saying here, Dusty, he's not as good as Spence at 154.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I'm saying. So he probably he takes the lesser of the two evils, which is a come down from 68 to 54, which might have weakened Charlo. Plus, he took a pretty good beating from Canelo. Psychologically, you may say
that's
this
the
guy
point
is
you're making too, Dusty. As a guy, that's the point you're making as a guy who's been there, an elite fighter yourself. You know, the body hasn't healed that well. He's taken a beating, and even though he's coming down to his comparable weight, he's not coming down at this time, Dusty, at his best at 154.
That's the way I feel. You know, that's the way I feel. He had a how should I say? No, okay, for lack of a better word, he had to hurt his body to move up to fight Canelo. You mean if you're a 54 pounder, leave yourself there unless you're ready to move and stay at 68 or 60, okay? But he moved up to fight Canelo, but now he has to dwindle and burn that out to get to 54, which is his weight. And so I don't know. And yet the funny thing about it is that his brother, the older Charlo, moved up to 68. Who did he fight? I forgot who he fought. He fought
Dusty, hold on a second. Dusty, that Block Talk Radio on Trust and Governor. It's a Saturday with Dusty. Little sounds of the island music in the background. And yeah, we're back here with you. It's Dusty and Doc here on a Saturday talking to Sweet Science, the in and outs on a Saturday. Glad to have you back again one time. Doc Stanley, sponsored by Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Doc and Dusty, hey, does it get any better than that? The answer is no. It doesn't get any better. Neither the music. A little more.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah, okay. So this is what I'm saying. The older Charlo, finally after 2 year layoff because of injuries, looked good, but it wasn't impressive. You know, and he wants to stay at 68 to challenge Canelo. So what I'm saying is that obviously they're all looking to stay, one, active, and number two, they're looking to stay active, not only active, but in the big money fights, or at least something, semblance.
You know, I'm thinking about you talking, you know, you said he didn't look good. I remember George Benson said, you know, just win tonight, look good in the next fight.
But the thing is, I got excuse him because he was off all over 2 years for injuries and other personal problems. So he was rusty. Let's put it this way: he was rusty. But he did look good enough to win.
Dusty, in this case, do you commend him for not getting back in the ring at 100%? Some people said, but you know, Ray Robinson would fight with a cold. We've said this before. Aguero said you can kill your best. So we got to take our hats off to him not getting back in that ring at 100%. Correct, Dust?
Well, you see, it's not so it's not so much 100%, okay? Even though technically you're right. It is the rust that eats a fighter's body, okay? He hasn't fought. I mean, I could train for a year in the gym, and oh man, I look like Sugar Ray Robinson. But man, when I step into that ring for real, to fight an opponent, the rust comes up, man. The rust is telling you, or the insecurities, or the unsure of whether you should throw this jab the way you used to before because you're not as sharp as you were. So now what happens is that this was a well-paid sparring session in front of an audience. So now he should be sharper, the next time around. You see what I'm saying? So what I'm saying is
you're saying, Dusty, and I remember, you know, Billy Giles at the time with Fanny come out said the same thing you say. You know, training in a gym is not like fighting in a fight.
Exactly. It's you're staying in shape. You're staying in condition. You because that's your profession, okay? And you also carry maybe a 10 to 15 pound overweight while you're training, but you're not really training for a fight. You're still staying in condition doing your road work or whatever, okay? And the fact of the matter is that not fighting for a long time. No matter how well prepared you are and trained and you went to camp for 8 weeks and you strategize and plan and the whole thing, coming back after 2 years or 3 years, it's no man's land. And you wonder whether you're still effective from the time that you were fighting every other day or every other week. That's what it is. You got to beat the rust out of this, beat the rust out of this next fight. And then for the next fight, can I say this too?
Hitting in the batting cage is not like hitting against live pitching.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's a perfect example. You could bat a million, hit 25,000 home runs off a batting cage, but when you got Nolan Ryan throwing a 95-mile-an-hour ball and you're going to try to hit it. Yeah, man, it ain't gonna work. Yeah, so basically, what it is, you gotta stay in action. But unfortunately, the injuries. I mean, people get hurt. Of course, boxers get hurt. You know, you get knocked out. You get a cut eye. You get stopped. You get staggered, and you know, you have to, you know, commission tells you're suspended until you're ready to come back. And that takes a lot out of you, you know. So the idea is that if you're gone for a certain amount of time, you know, and Charlo, number one, is undefeated middleweight champ, you know, so, you know, and to come back, you have to take, what did Joe Louis say, the Bum of the Month campaign to stay sharp. But Joe Louis was never out of action. The guy fought, 11 years, defended his title 25 times. I mean, but these guys today, another thing, these guys today don't fight anymore unless they're fighting championship fights. I remember over the weight matches with Ray Robinson, Carl Bobo Olsen, Kid Gavilan, Joe Louis. I mean, they sometimes they even fought their sparring partners. They fought their sparring partners and fought some worthwhile contender just to keep busy before the championship fight. But today, unless
you also may happen to make a couple of dollars too. You know, I mean, exactly. You know, Kamajino said too, it's better fighting, making money than training in the gym and not making money.
spending time on sparring partners and paying rent for the gym. and that's what it is.
Yeah.
So the fact of the matter is
Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, you hear things here, ladies and gentlemen. You don't hear any place else, and I've said this and humbly and maybe probably my people are the best. Now, Dusty just interjected two things that you don't hear, okay? Spending gym fees, and you got to pay the sparring partner. They're not going to spar for nothing. So there's money being spent. Dusty, let's say a baseball fan. You talked about Nolan Ryan, and they said he threw a first opening. He said he threw an opening day pitch the other day, you know, at 87 miles an hour.
I'm telling you,
he threw an opening day pitch, you know, in some ceremony at 87 miles an hour. And now let's go to Tony Gwynn. And Jump Shot Joni always talks about Tony Gwynn. Now, Tony Gwynn was a lifetime 331 hitter, 7 batting championships. Tony Gwynn only struck out 3 times in one game, and he only struck out, I think, 11 times against Smoltz, Glavin,
Smoltz and some other
Pedro
guys, yeah.
Martinez, and the left-handed pitcher. I see Tom something. But what was amazing, Dusty, was the stat that I saw yesterday about Tony Gwynn, who's a lifetime. Tony Gwynn is a lifetime 331 hitter. against 25 Cy Young Award winners, his batting average this year is .341, 10 points higher than his lifetime batting average.
Because 20 wins is in the same level, or I put it, this is my perception, is in the same community of Rod Carew's. Okay?
Those
They were not home run hitters, but my God, man, they'll punish you by getting that ball out of the infield no matter what. I mean, no matter what, they'll always find a hole inside the infield to keep that ball alive and keep scoring points. And I'm very sure, without even studying it, that when Rod Carew or Tony Gwynn or whatever came into bat and there were guys in scoring positions with two outs, the pitcher would say, oh, goddamn, this freaking guy. Why could I get somebody else?
Not him again.
Oh, my God. Now what am I going to do? Walk him? Tony Gwynn was a monster,
no,
man.
And Gwynn and Carew, along with Stan Musial, lifetime .331 hitters. Musial won 7 batting titles. Gwynn won 7 batting titles. I think Carew won 4 or 5. You know, they asked Willie Mays, Dr. Mays, who was the best player, on his team? He said, well, the best player I saw played against wasn't on my team. He said, it was Roberto Clemente. He said, he wasn't a home run hitter perceived in our day, but in today's day, with 25, 30 home runs, he's a home run hitter. Clemente and Mays played on the same team in Santurce, Puerto Rico. And one year, they won the championship when Clemente hit a home run to tie the game up, and then Mays hit a home run to win the game. Next year, they won the championship when Mays stole home. So, him and Clemente had played a lot of – my all-time outfield is left field, Barry Bonds is on the team, but Hank Aaron starts. In center field is Willie Mays. In right field, Roberto Clemente. And it's hard to top that. First of all, every man here on that I just mentioned has 3,000 hits. Every man here that I mentioned, has won a batting championship. Every man here that I mentioned has won an MVP award. And every man I hear is a World Series winner. You can't top that outfield. In my opinion, Hank Aaron.
In the Hall of Fame. They're in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, Dusty, what a coincidence.
They all walk with holy hands. We're here.
What a coincidence. I have a picture here. I got to put it. It's a picture of an all-star game. And when I first saw this picture, it was about 10 years ago, you realize life, friends. It was Mays standing in the middle. To his right was Clemente. To his left was Aaron, or vice versa. And I said, that's the greatest outfield of all time. They're all lifetime 300 hitters. They all got 3,000 hits. They all won a gold glove. They all won an MVP. And they all won a World Series. In the case of Aaron and Mays, they also happened to win home run titles. But, Clemente, I remember they said, Clemente, if you didn't rush run down the first base and you hit a hot shot to right field, Clemente would throw you out of first base. I remember a certain player said, he said, I didn't think anybody could do that to me. Here's a picture of the line drive hard to right. Clemente would throw you out at first base.
Like Springfield Rifle, he would throw you out like you're a dead duck. And you wonder how the hell he's able to project and fire that ball with such speed and accurately. I said, I have all these bases, and this sucker gets me.
And you'd be like, come on, Roberto. Hey, man, I was only funning, baby. You know what I mean? They tell this story of Willie Mays almost, I forgot what they call it, the round robin. Dines Drysdale hit a single to center field. And now, Drysdale is just, jogging to first because he's got Mays picks up and throws him out of first base. He said Drysdale is livid. He's livid. You know what I mean? Now, the next inning afterwards, he throws out Willie Davis trying to go from first to third.
Yeah.
Then he throws out Murray Wills tagging up on the fly ball trying to get home. Now, he had Jim LaFever.
He had Jim LaFever.
And he had LaFever out, but what happened, the second baseman dropped the ball. And, Mays would have had thrown a man out at every base, but, it didn't come off. But, those guys, man, just great players. In the greatest era of baseball, it's just something, man. You know, it's really, really remarkable.
The offense underestimates the agility.
Well, you know what I was looking at too, Dusty?
And accuracy of the fielder. And then figure, this guy can't catch me. He's too deep. But you forget the guy got a Springfield rifle for an arm.
I never saw anybody in watching games that went from first to third, Clemente or Mays. If you hit a single to right field, you stay at second base, center field. It's remarkable. And we thank God that, among the great outfield, we still have Willie Mays with us. Hank, a couple of years ago, passed Clemente in the tragic plane crash, lifeboat system of urgent crisis. There he was, going down there to help the people down there. But, staying at baseball. And I got two other things. So I got a stat here with Koufax. Put him on the thing, in a five-year period, he had like a 1-something ERA. He was 143, a 1.7 ERA. Now, to me, he's the best left-hander at our time, I think at any time. Satchel Paige is number one, but good stat. And then, you look at – I was looking last night, man, at some highlights of Gooden. And, Gooden was just an – excuse the term here, ladies. See, Gooden was a motherfucker, man. Ralph Kiner told me. Ralph Kiner. Doc Stanley.
You had a rifle for an arm.
Ralph Kiner told me. Oh, yeah. Ralph Kiner told me. And understand, Ralph Kiner is the only man to lead the league in home runs 7 straight years. They tell the story, Dusty, and my buddy Peter in Brazil, last when we talk about it. But, he comes in to talk to Branch Rickey, and the name Branch Rickey is always synonymous with Jackie Robinson and the Dodgers and the integration of baseball. And so he comes in, and he tells Mr. Rickey that he, I've led the league in home runs again. I think I deserve a raise. And Mr. Rickey said, there's some merit in what you say, but Ralph, we finished in last place with you, and we can finish in last place without you.
Oh my God! How do you come back from that remark?
He says, congratulations, and that's the merit of what you say, but we came in last place, Ralph, and we can come in last place without you, Ralph.
So you got to share the blame too. Oh God,
it's Dusty and Doc on a Saturday morning, our Saturday segment here, looking for maybe. My mother don't. I should have my phone in front of it. Looking for maybe NFL Ed to join us. Usually our man calls us from, maybe I'll do this too. Our buddy from Enhanced Sports will have a show on tonight. I'm looking for this phone. Now, this may be what I want. I wanted to put a piece on here that Walt Frazier talked about that was so true. Everybody talks about Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
greatest player of all time, and Frazier said, you got to kind of break that down in a whole different vernacular. He said the only Superman in the history of basketball. He said Will Chamberlain, man. He said Chamberlain got 107 records. He said Jordan scored 50 points maybe 37 times.
is a chamber did 100 and something times. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so let's get things in perspective. You know what I mean? And I think I have that interview here. I found the other phone that I want, that way I could play it, and also some other stuff here. So let me see if I can do this the way I want to do it.
Okay, go ahead. You want to research, or can I talk to you?
No. Go ahead. You keep going.
The problem that I have with this statement of the greatest of all time, it bothers me because the guy was greatest at the time that he played. But you cannot overshadow the guy, the predecessors who were great in their time. But if you're going to tell me the greatest of all times, that means overshadowing the dudes before him for centuries and until he retired and he was better than them. I like to meet the challenge of them playing with each other, against each other, one. And if it's boxing, I want to see them fighting against each other to prove or to show me, yes, this guy is the greatest. I do have my preferences. To me, the greatest jabber in boxing was Joe Louis. He had a knockout punch for a jab. Okay? This guy, his trainer. Oh, Jack Blackburn? I think it was Jack Blackburn. He said, I'm going to develop Joe Louis' jab to be a knockout punch. And the way he trained, I saw training books and how he trained. Because when Joe Louis hit you with that jab, it was like a right cross. That's how hard he jabbed that. You know, so you cannot say, and then you cannot say, I'm great, I'm better than this guy, better than that. You know, some of these guys today, they don't know how to jab. They don't know how to bob and weave. They don't. So how could, if you're undefeated in 50-yard fights or you're 50 straight and it's 50 knockouts, you're greater than some dude before you. No, I just cannot buy that. It just bothers me. It just says, yeah, you were great at your time, okay? But you don't surpass what the other guy accomplished, even though the other guy may not have accomplished as much as you. You may be better than him at comparative time, but still in all, the greatest of all times, that's undermining everybody else's achievement. This is why, you know, it bothers me.
Calling the show.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. But
NFL Ed's going to join us. Okay, Eddie, join us, Eddie.
Right. And the thing is that you were talking about Tony Gwynn and Rock Carew, and as soon as you said Tony Gwynn, in the back of my mind, I thought about Rock Carew. Oh, I love that freaking dude. I love how he stood there squatting at that batting, the home plate.
Jesse, hold on. You're talking about Tony Gwynn, and then you're talking about Rod Carew. Are you doing a Latin thing against the brother here for me, man? What's happening, Jesse?
I'm projecting my bias. My Latin bias.
I really feel good. NFL Ed is going to join us. It's a Saturday. Looking for Jump Shot down the line. It's a Saturday segment. The sports is long overdue. Haven't done it for a while. So we've got the crew here. Got the family here. Ed should be joining us momentarily. And if not, I'll call him back and give him the number that he should be calling. And I want to play that interview that Walt Frazier talked about. See, I think there are certain things in certain situations that's cut and dry for the greatest of all time. You know, it's cut and dry when, you know, and, you know, Ed, we're talking about the greatest of all time. NFL is here. NFL Ed is here with us. The Chiefs have won back-to-back Super Bowls. They won three of the last five. They've been in six straight championship games. And we're talking about the greatest of all time. And, you know, Ed, and I thought he was a hell of a quarterback himself, Walt Frazier. But Frazier had a nice piece there. What were we talking about, too, Eddie? Because Eddie was one of the outstanding catchers of his era. And we were talking about Nolan Ryan, you know, as one of these ceremonies where he – we got NFL Edgeways now, too, Dusty.
Yeah.
And
how you doing?
He was saying that, you know, Ed is one of these things where, you know, he's throwing out the first pitch to a game. Ed, he threw it at 87 miles an hour. 87 miles an hour. Nolan Ryan.
For a month.
Yeah. 87 miles an hour, Ed. And we were talking about, too, we were seeing in the segment of baseball, is that Tony Gwynn was a lifetime 331 hitter, 7 batting championships, but he had a 341 batting average against 25 Cy Young Award winners. Eddie, your thoughts on that?
First of all, I got to tell you, I had a special treat. I got to watch Nolan Ryan pitch for Texas against the Yankees, and I was literally my seats were 3 rows in back of the mound. And the buddy I brought with me and treated was one of my high school pitchers who threw tremendous heat and spotted it greatly. And he was just looking at me. Do you hear the pop in the glove? We were lucky enough to be that close. But that's the thing, the explosiveness of the ball when it finally gets to the mound. It pops and it moves. And that's what kills a batter, in my opinion. You know, Dusty, you're on board. Hello, buddy. Always great to hear from you. And great. I was just thinking about you when I was reading about Houston's preseason scores, and I said, "Well, God bless you for your retirement and all that." Great. Good to hear from you.
Damn. Kenny's watching that Block Talk Radio and Southern Drive Network. I was looking for that. I thought I had Frazier. They had the thing. Okay, we're talking about what also was mind-boggling was, you know, Gwynn, 10 points high against 25. I think he only struck out 3 times in one game in his career, and I think he struck out combined 9 times against Maddux, Glavine, Smoltz, and Pedro Martinez. Just a great deal. But, and, you know, now we got you here in the football vernacular. The Chiefs now back-to-back Super Bowl winners. Only team now with a chance to win 3 in a row, 3 out of the last 5. And we talked about how they got screwed in that game in Kansas City where they called that roughing the passer. And, you know, I think, Eddie, when they get a guy lined up in the neutral zone, I think that's straight-up bullshit because it's a call they're making. And he's been doing this all game. So now all of a sudden, you're going to call him for being at, you know, at a crucial time in the neutral zone. But the thing here, Ed, let's talk about this. How does the San Francisco 49ers come to the Super Bowl and have no clue? I said, now one guy said on the team he knew, but, you know, it's a head coach. How did nobody have a clue about the new rules in overtime, Eddie? I mean, that I think without question, it falls on the coach, Eddie.
I totally agree. Reporting one out there for the toss. You got to pull some people to the side. Come on, what do you have, a handful of captains? Not even that many. Pull them to the side. Look, remember, these are new format. And you saw Kansas City was just elated. Oh, my God, they agreed to do it this way. It blew my mind. That was the start of it.
It should have been an informational clinic to inform everybody of what was going on. How the hell can you go into a game of that cruciality and not know the rules and not be aware?
Here's the thing, Dustin. When they talked to Mahomes about it, he said, "We knew about this since spring training."
Yeah.
People are about to get spring training. You know,
well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, when you break the law, ignorance of the law is no excuse. But here you're in a business where you should know the law from A to Z and practice it and rehearse it and have clinics to remind. And they didn't know? Somebody fell asleep at the switch. Maybe all the heads of the 49ers will be fired because they cost them a game.
Agreed. Now, like, to your point, Pete Carroll should have been on a plane a long time ago if the Super Bowl lost.
As you said that when Dusty said that, I thought if I was the owner of Seattle, I'd have told Pete, hey, you and your staff take everything off that has Seattle on it. Get to the airport as soon as possible before I change my mind. and not even pay. And they say that Marshall Lynch went over there and just laughed in his face. You know what I mean?
What was it? Two in inches? Three in inches? Or one in inches? For a touchdown, and he calls a pass play. Are you for real? I would have hanged him right in the Seattle Stadium. I mean, come on, man. But I know what you're saying. But the fact is that you should know what the heck you're doing if you're gonna be the play caller, for God's sake, and as you know the rules, for God's sake. I mean, what's going on here, man? If this is for the money,
nobody talks about this.
And Pete Carroll's still around.
You know, there's two things here. There's a plus factor for the Kansas City defense for blocking the point after. But how do you – if you miss the point after, you win the game in regulation. Ed, I don't know. Has anybody even said anything about the guy missed the point after, which was the difference in them winning the game? Nobody – I don't hear anybody talking about that, Ed.
No. I got one guy. His name is Jeff Saturday. And he was adamant about, like, whoa, how do you do that? And that's missing an extra point is not like whatever. It's like a foul shot. We talk about that all the time, right? But, yeah, that was terrible.
If you guys follow the – well, I know I do. I'm not – I don't mean any derision around you. I remember this is the Buffalo Bills when they were about to beat the Giants. And boom, and he misses it. This was just to tie and to go ahead. And he still misses offside, right side. I said, how the hell? And then you're a place kicker and you're that close? How the heck did you miss it? Was it nerves or whatever the heck it was? But it's like a deja vu. I sat back there when I saw that missed point. I sat back and I saw the Buffalo Bills against the Giants. Maybe 20 Super Bowls ago when Jim Kelly was the quarterback. I said, oh, my Lord, what the hell happened here? How could you miss it? But those things happen.
Yeah. I recall what Jeff Saturday said, and I believe he's a fair guy. He was a center for the Colts, you know, when it was the Peyton Manning era.
Yeah.
But he said, come on. You can't do that. It's an extra point. So,
right, extra point. How could you miss it? I mean, it's unreal, but it does happen. I guess it's the nerves of the game and the way you kick it, the way you're not supposed to. You know, I look at the kicker. If he's going for the 3 points or he's going for the field goal or whatever the hell he wants, I said, Jesus. Now, I'm strategizing. I said, well, Jesus, yeah, he's too close to the left. He's too close to the right. Maybe he should stand center. So if he kicks it either way, left or right, it's center enough for the ball to go in anyway. But I don't know what the hell they're doing. They kick, how
you
they
know
kick.
What? I'll tell you something. This is not an excuse. But, you know, they continue to keep pushing the point after further back. You know, it used to be just simply automatic, but they keep pushing it further, which is no excuse. But, you know, you just wonder what it's all about. But there was no excuse for him to miss the point after. But at the same time, let's take our hats off to the Kansas City defense. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And who knew that would really be, as we look back in retrospect, the key to victory? Because there's no overtime. If they make that, what happens? I tell you what happens. We look at it now. We think about it. If he makes that, Kansas City has to score a touchdown to win the game, as opposed to going for the 3 points, because you can't go for the 3 points because it's over 4 points. So you need the touchdown. So what happens? We have Kansas City winning regulation, or we have them winning regulation. You know, that was the key to that. Doc Stanley's fourth in the block touchdown. In other words, it is a Saturday segment with NFL Ed. We're looking for Jump Shot Jones to join us, and we've got Dusty here talking boxing, talking football, talking baseball. I saw some video, and Doc was figured. Doc Gooden. I remember Ralph kind of told me Doc Gooden was the best young pitcher he ever saw, and man, Doc was a monster, man. You know, actually, Ed and Dusty, he should have won the Cy Young that first year. They gave it to the guy. I forgot the guy's name. He came from the American League, and then he came into the National League. He won about, Sutcliffe won about 15 games in a row. Gooden was 17-9 and led the league in strikeouts. And, you know, I'm going with it again. If the complexions are different, Gooden wins the Cy Young, and Sutcliffe does it. Okay, at 17-9, leading the league in major leagues in strikeouts, and a 2-something ERA, there's no way in the world that Gooden wasn't the best pitcher in baseball. But, you know, I'm playing the race card because it's always being played. How did Sutcliffe beat out Gooden? I think Sutcliffe won 23 games, but Gooden, I think, had a lower ERA. More importantly, you know, he led the league in strikeouts. You know, as a rookie, I just said he's more dominant. But anyhow, I just think Gooden should have won it. And I think there's always some hanky-panky in it. In a case like that,
probably turn around and say, "Well, Gooden only won 17, and Sutcliffe won 23. So there's was it 17? Was it six more games? So that made him the front runner. I mean, that's the way I would deduce it. You know,
I always thought that 20 games was the automatic injection automatically winning the Cy Young Award. But that's not the case. Tom Seaver won it with 19 games.
Exactly.
When he beat Randy Smith out. So guys have won. What's the guy from Seattle? I think he was 12-11. And so 20 was no, like at one time, 3,000 hits. I think it's still the case, Eddie. 3,000 hits, 500 home runs get you into the Hall of Fame. So I said 20 wins had to be the standard to even consider you for the Cy Young. But as I look back, and other people said the same thing, Gooden was the best pitcher in baseball his first year as a rookie. He was the best pitcher, wasn't Sutcliffe? You know, and once again,
maybe they took into account that he was a rookie. He was not an established veteran. I mean, those things do come into play, even though they're not fair.
I'm saying what came into play again was racism. I don't care if you're a rookie or not. You hit 400, you hit 300. I don't care if you're a rookie or not. Doc Gooden should have won the Cy Young Award his first year in the league, and he didn't win it because of racial interjection. That's all. It's that simple. You know, it's the only other player. How did he not win it? And I'm saying if the complexions are reversed, Sutcliffe doesn't win, Gooden wins. But the
maybe they hide behind statistics, and this is what I'm trying to tell you. You may be right.
You hit on the head, Dusty. You hit on it. And I gotta look up the stats too of both guys that year too. See,
exactly. The difference. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm looking for. Bill Russell had a good piece here, and I thought I had a piece on Walt Frazier talking about, you know, because they're talking about Jordan being the greatest of all time. And he said, you know, there's only one Superman in all of basketball. That was Bill Chamberlain. He said, and then you look at the year that Chamberlain scored 50 points. He pulled down 25 rebounds a game. And here's the staggering thing, Ed and Dusty.
Yeah.
He played every minute of every game.
Exactly.
That's remarkable. 48 minutes.
Yeah, that was, I'm sorry. Did that call my attention when they were bringing that out this week? That is great.
He averaged 48.5 minutes a game. So not only did he play all of the regular games, but he played the games when they went into overtime.
Yeah. He played all those games. He was a workhorse. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
see, that's why I tell you, Doc, that the greatest of all time doesn't cut it to me. You know, you were good at that time, but look at what you did at the time. Like for right now, they're talking about placing Mahone almost on the level of Tom Brady. I said, are you for real?
No, Dusty is on the level of Tom Brady.
Dusty,
he's taking his team to six straight championship
games.
That's
what I'm
Dusty.
Saying to you. They say he has six Super Bowl rings, man. What's wrong with you, man?
No. This level, at this level, Dusty, Tom Brady was not at the level that Mahomes is right now. At the same age, he was not at the same level as Mahomes.
Right. You're probably right, but my answer to that is, so what? The man wedged his way all the way, and then he took a lowly Tampa Bay and made him Super Bowl champs. That gives him
Now, in that case, Dusty, Brady went to another good team. Brady looked, he selected, he picked another good team. You know,
exactly.
Now, would he have won a Super Bowl coming to the Jets? No. It's not his fault, but I think there are certain avenues that is. Willie Mays is unquestionably the greatest baseball player that's ever played, bar none. Okay, when it comes to football, and I got a funny thing. When it comes to football, the greatest football player of all time is Jim Brown. It's not a quarterback that depends
never,
on a line.
Never injured. He dragged the defensive guys into the end zone with him.
I will never forget this. Eddie, I think I told you this story. He's down at the late, great Carl Nesfield, Malcolm X Personal Photography Club. No, we're having Jim Brown, the America I Can, service others, rent you pay for your room here. Ali, life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others, Dr. King? The Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Jim Brown is working with the Youth of America. So he's going to be on a showman. Legendary spot, had never been there too in Harlem. So I get there, and there is the legendary sports writer from the Anthony News, Howie Evans. Mel, can you give me and Jim a ride to Spofford? I had to carry Jim Brown on my back to Spofford. So we get up to Spofford, and Howie, again, by the grace of God, honest me. Hey, Mel, you introduced Jim Brown. And I introduced the kid and said, you have no idea who stands in school. He's the greatest football player ever lived. And as the kid's asking questions, this one stood out, Eddie. This one stood out, Dusty. The kid said, of all your records, what are you most proudest of? You know what he said? I never missed a game.
Every season he was there.
9 years in a row, the number one marked man by D. Because I asked Gale Sayers one time, who's the best running back of all time? And Sayers answered, I could ask him his social security number. He said, Jim Brown. I said, why? He said, well, first of all, he was the best. He said, but you have to understand, in Jim Brown's era, the defense was designed to stop the rush first and the pass second. So all
exactly.
These running backs were running against a design defense that's looking to stop, in the old days, it was vice. And now they're looking to stop the pass first and the rush second. But in Jim Brown's day, you stopped the nine. He led the league in rushing 8 out of 9 years. The only man to win rookie and MVP in the same year in the history of the NFL, I think unequivocally, he's the greatest football player. Now, I think unequivocally, Lawrence Taylor is the greatest defensive player. I think in baseball, it's Mays all-around perspective. Pitching-wise, left-handed, Sandy Koufax, bar none. Left-handed, Sandy Koufax. Right-handed, although it's Satcher Paige and my guy, right-handed guys, you go back and forth. But, I think there's certain guys that are good. They talked about Jordan. And Isaiah said, he doesn't have a lifetime winning record against us, the Pistons, time winning record against the Lakers or the Celtics. He said, the year that he won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, his team was bounced out in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think there are certain eras, gentlemen, and you agree, where the game was at. What made Pelé the greatest football player of all time? Because Pelé was the greatest football player of bazillions players in an era when the game was at its best. This game has changed now. I mean, I have to have a problem, Eddie and Dusty. If I'm a pitcher and I go out in the 10th inning and you automatically put a guy on second base, how the hell did he get there?
You look at
now pitch count. Marichal Warren Spahn, never forget the game. Out of town scoreboard. Bob Murphy. Let's look at out of town scoreboard. San Francisco, hosting the Braves. There's nothing in the three spawn against Marshall. You know, at the game. Okay, all the time scoreboard. Seventh inning, it's still nothing spawn against Marshall. They're in the 10th inning now. Still nothing spawn. Hey, it's the bottom of the 16th inning. Willie Mays has just hit a home run. The Braves lose to the Giants 1-0. Winning pitcher who went the distance, Juan Marichal. Losing pitcher who went the distance, Juan Spahn. Marichal told me I threw 248 pitches that day. Now, let's also count, Dusty and Ed, he threw 16 times. He threw 8 times 16, but over 300 pitches. So the guys are just a whole better breed today, man. I mean, of yesteryear. The guys are more fundamentally sound. I think there's an era you can say where the guys were the best, and that's the era I can pull the best out of. Brady is a great quarterback. He's won 7 Super Bowls. In retrospect, he should have won 5. You know, how the hell does Pete Carroll not run the football? And then again, there's also some racial overtones there. Didn't want to see a black guy be the MVP. Now, the other thing is, and we go back to Shanahan again, can we ever forget in 2016 he got a 28-3 lead and the game goes into overtime? 28-3 lead. How are you passing the football? You got a 20 and you lost. It's not Brady's fault. Yeah. But the thing here, Dusty, at this point of the career, Mahomes is superior. And if he didn't get that straight that fuck call, I mean that they did for Brady roughing the passer. They beat them. They go to that Super Bowl. That's the Super Bowl that Brady again doesn't win when they beat the Rams. So, but at this point in his career, he's superior to Brady. He's superior to Brady. I mean, you know, now he's got 3 Super Bowl titles. Yeah. So he's 4 away. But statistically, I mean, Ed, come in, Eddie, talk to me, Eddie. I think at this point, I mean. He at this stage of his career, he's superior to Brady. NFL, give me some thoughts, Ed.
Performance-wise, yes. But Brady still always brings back the team to do it. If you make a mistake against Brady, you pay for it. And that's what happened with the Falcons. That was, how did that even happen? Never mind the debacle in Seattle with Pete Carroll. But how, you know, and you and I have talked about this for years. But, Montana is he's a leader. He's good. Not only that, I love his slick style. And being a baseball fan and a high school, all that catching and that, you know, you watch a great shortstop and then they have great finesse. Move, they pitch that double play, you know, the hand movements and that. And so he took that with him as a quarterback and also some basketball, correct? Mahomes is a very talented athlete, very diligent with his thinking about how he can move things around and his hand movements and control the ball. Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot of talent. Nobody else has brought that in for a while, in my opinion. You know, and he runs. You know, he runs smart. He runs smart, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Not into the trap.
The thing here, at this juncture, he's superior to Brady. He's been in a championship game every year since the starting quarterback. He's through for the 4,000 or 5,000 yards. At this stage of his career, he's better than Brady. Okay, Brady did not accomplish what this kid has done at this stage of his career. Brady, and I say I have a problem with today's quarterbacks, gentlemen. You know, and Joe Namath talked about that too. You know, I got a problem with today's quarterbacks because back in the day, when you came in as a quarterback, Dusty, Ed, you called the plays. It didn't come from the bench. You didn't have 50 of them on your wrist. You called the plays. It's like in basketball. I don't buy this point guard, shooting guard bullshit. A guard has to be able to have a jump shot and handle the ball. You know, so the guy that can only dribble and the guy that only shoot is not complete. Well, but as far as the speculation of today's game, but in a quarter, that's why I've always leaned toward Peyton Manning in a lot of ways over Brady and maybe even our guy now with the Jets because they call their own plays. You know, Brady and everybody in the game today, I don't know, in Mahomes' case, but, you know, a quarterback called his own plays. He didn't get calls from the sideline. He didn't have a headphone telling him to be 7-2 on 16. He called his own plays. Bart Starr, Johnny Unitas, Warren Moon. You know, we go back. Sonny Jurgensen, McDonovan. All those guys, they call their own plays. In today's game, and I can see why the coaches, and that's why we have to put it on Shanahan, because how did you not know about the rule changes? And you're calling the plays. And he was in that 28-3 game that you bring up, NFL. He was the offensive coordinator. So how do you blow a 28-3? You know, you're leading 28-3, and the game goes into overtime. So there's a lot of emphasis, I think, where we have to point. We can justifiably point at the case, coach. And I think we can justifiably do this in the 49er game, because, you know, so what they're saying, too, is that, you know what, had they known, we'd have gave Kansas City the ball first, okay, then we would know what our options were to come back, you know, if they had scored. So, you know, that's that. Dr. Stanley Sports is at Block Talk Radio, Trust Gov Network. It's NFL Ed. It's Dusty here looking for Jump Shot to join us. We were talking about Tony Gwynn and talking about all the things. The Knicks are playing some pretty good basketball. I don't know what happened to that piece I did on Walt Frazier. I'm looking for it, but I can't find it. I thought I'd look it up, though. But that's it. Dr. Andy Sports at Block Talk Radio, Trust and Guard Network. Dusty, getting back to boxing real quick. What's happening with this fight with Haney and Garcia? That's the kid's name?
Yeah, Ryan Garcia. You know, he's trying to project himself as the new Golden Boy. And he'll never scratch himself as the new Golden Boy. But he does most of his fighting with his mouth, you know, and that's what I'm telling you. He sells good fights. I got to give him credit that he talks himself into big-time fights. There was no way he was going to beat Tank Davis. I mean, Tank Davis clocked him in the second round, dropped him like a lead balloon, and then he was flaying around until Tank Davis, a hard-hitting tank, and he deserved the name Tank. Hits him with a body, paralyzes him, and he knocks him out.
Dusty, what June has said, Dusty, is that Garcia has spent too much time promoting himself, and he's done well at that. But he said one, he should have long had a title.
Exactly.
And he's more concerned about image and promotion than evidently right now about winning the title.
Exactly. He's more, you couldn't say it clearer. He's promoting himself. And then, of course, unable for Haney to come up with, oh, there's a matchup between Haney and Tank Davis. Oh, my God, I'm chomping at the bits for that. But it's not coming through. There's Shakur from Jersey. Oh, what a tremendous, that young kid is a dark horse, which I think would beat, and this is, you know, me, I never predict, will beat everybody else, including Haney. But they're not negotiating with Shakur, you know. So all these guys who are coming around challenging each other, and the money is right, like I said, Ryan Garcia, and he's with Golden Boy, so I said, okay, we got it, let's make it. You know, there was a guy named Prairie who fought Derek Haney the other day. I thought Prairie was going to, I mean, talked his way into a championship fight, and his knockout power was, and Haney took him to school. But he made a good purse. So what I'm saying to you is this is what he's talking himself into money fights, and he's talking about going up to the 47s. He even mentioned maybe I challenged Crawford, you know, and all he's seeing is a freaking purchase. But you got to be very careful. He could be clocked out. But here, fighting Haney, it surprised me But then again, it was made. And Haiti says, I'll take on anybody. So they are, so they're going to fight. But the fact of the matter is that, right, like I said to you before, these guys, these champions, are not fighting over the weight matches to keep busy. They're only fighting title shots. And I guess that's where the money is. That's where the pay-per-view is. And that's where the people are looking for championship fights only. But the 10 rounders are only for the, I shouldn't say mediocre, but for the less no championship fights. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in boxing, you fight for two things, Dustin. You fight for the title and championship. Ed, we're going to go back to you. We're talking about coaches. Can we not blame Baltimore? Why are you not running the football? You're the number one running team in football. The one weakness of this outstanding Kansas City defense is rushing, and you run the ball only six times.
And on top of it, they didn't really unleash Lamar. He was in pocket situations where everybody was deep, and he had some real estate there to gain, in my opinion. Okay.
Yeah.
But it was hampering. You got to stay in the pocket.
No. But the point is, what we're saying here, Dusty, is that Shay said, you don't have to prove that you can pass the football. I remember Dr. J talked about one time him and David Thompson, man. And, Thompson had missed a shot and didn't get the rebound. And Jerry said, hey, my best shot is the dunk. So, I mean, what you're saying, Eddie, once again, your intellect, you're humble about it, about this game. It's you do, Dusty. I mean, listen, let me say this in front of your face. Let me say this behind your back. You guys are geniuses what you do. You guys who make this show, I'm so thankful to God that you guys are family and friends. But, there's no better personnel on radio than my personnel. It's not my opinion. It's the facts. And you have a good point there, too, Dusty, and you too, Eddie, about, the real estate. The forte, the strength, Baltimore, was you always worrying about Jackson running. Now, I'm going to say this too, Dusty. I'm going to say this too, Ed. I'm going with you first. You're our football guy. I think that was a horrible call. You should not be calling a taunting call in a game that big. I forget it. Hey, you tell the guy, cut the bullshit, but you not call that kind of call in a championship game. And to me, it seems to always go toward the guys of color. But here's the question. I mean, Ed, that call should not be made by the officials in a game of this magnitude.
Yeah, that was a bullshit call. A bullshit call is not,
Tit for tat, that was a weak-ass, excuse my language, call, in my opinion. Yeah.
I mean, you just don't do that in a game of this magnitude. That's what I'm just saying. I mean, okay, listen, hey, you know what? Okay, little Johnny, you're talking. I told you to be quiet. Be quiet. Finish the test. I'm not going to tell you now you can't take the test. And now my thing is you don't call that. And we don't know what the guy did tackle him because, I looked up and Johnny's hitting Freddie, but I didn't see Freddie hit Johnny. But I'm just saying – In a game of that magnitude, you don't make that kind of call. I thought he should have ran to the left instead of the right, but still, you make that penalty call, so now you didn't gain all that you really gained. Mr. Bonham, you just don't make that. Why did you even bring that into the game, the taunting call? Well, I mean, what's that all about? It makes no sense to me. It was a tremendous call. I think they're talking about, if I'm right, Ed, about Henry maybe going to Baltimore.
Well, that would be a nice match.
But there's some talk about that. I mean, that enhances the rushing game. You know what I mean? It would really be something. But here's the thing too. And let's get back to you. They're talking about Barkley maybe not coming back to the Giants. What's the story with that?
You know, look, Doc. Yes. They're using Barkley as a plow horse, and they're not paying him enough hay. That's the bottom line.
No.
He has a giant, and then they're chump changing him. Come on, the man's been injured and played injured, this, that, and the other, and they're not giving him the bucks that they're giving other suckers.
Dusty, I don't know if you know that, but you know, and you know he's Iron Barkley's nephew.
I didn't know that. I didn't know the boxer, the super middleweight.
Hey, the Blade. He's the Blade's nephew. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Bobby's nephew. Yeah. I'll be a son of a bitch. But, oh my God.
Iron Barkley is the only guy to beat Tommy Hearns twice. He knocked out Tommy, and he outboxed Tommy. He's the only guy whose resume shows he beat the great Tommy Hearns. He shouldn't have lost to nobody. But in jail. But he's I would always ask, hey, how's your uncle doing? Yeah, he's Barkley's nephew. And
Iron Barkley was the one that got his ass whipped by Roberto Duran.
Well, you know what? It wasn't so much of an ass whipping as it was showed the greatness of Duran to come up.
Yeah,
now he's
knocked him down.
Well, you know what the key to that fight, Dusty, was when Barkley hit Cholo. And he spun him around.
Yep, and he didn't go down.
Remember, he stuck his foot out. I want to go back to you, and I just remember how proud I was. Remember that time down at the Victor's Cafe?
Yeah.
And he told you guys that I'd always been at what? You remember that? He said I was always at his fights and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the only guy I know to call me Cholo.
Yeah, because and that brings good memory. You know, when you talk about Duran, I think there's another guy, Dusty, unquestionably the greatest 135 fighter ever. I just think unquestioned about that, the 135.
Oh, yeah.
But we take our hats off them because of two weight class. No. At middleweight, he's coming from 135. 140, 147. Yeah, I think he's good. Ed, getting back to you real quick. Your thoughts now, if Barkley doesn't come back to the Giants, where does he go? And your thoughts on him not coming back?
I believe it's a tough running back market in the NFL. Period. But I believe he wants to be back with the Giants, unless they're thinking of other moves, money wise, cap wise. I don't like it. I don't buy it. But a lot of people will be very interested in him. It's kind of like all of a sudden, what about with Chicago, right? And their quarterback, and they're definitely going to move ahead, and they're going to pull the number one draft, and they get a new quarterback. Did you hear that? Right?
Who the Giants?
No, Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
The Giants move, so that's in that conference, the NFC, some major moves or changes. But and my point is, you got Henry, you got him, Saquon, but where are they gonna go? There's a lot of places. What's your thoughts? Does Pittsburgh need another back? No. They need a quarterback, right?
Hey, Dusty, what about him winding up, are you ready for this, Kansas City or Baltimore?
You know, damn it, I was just thinking the same shit.
Kansas City,
Isaiah Pacheco from Rutgers and Barkley on the other side, oh, my God, that could be unbeatable. Those two animals.
Yeah.
Isaiah Pacheco runs for the world.
And not to mention Kansas City has a pretty decent quarterback too, huh?
Exactly. Oh, my God. Man, I thought about that as you guys were talking. I said, man, why don't you go to the Kansas City Chiefs? And man, that tandem, Pacheco and Barkley, oh, my Lord, you can't beat that. They'll probably have an undefeated season. And I'm predicting that cockeyed wise. Are you?
It's stranger things have happened, man. There's no question about that. Doc Stanley, Gentlemen, give me a quick minute for a plug. Dr. Stanley, Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Dark Radio Network. Michael.
This is Michael Bellamy of Brooklyn Independent Media, and you're listening to Doc Stanley of Sports in Depth on Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm back here with Dusty, NFL Ed. We're talking about a horde of different things. Ed, you know, you being a catcher. Oh, no, you talked about the Nolan Ryan with the 87-mile-out first day pitch, you know what I mean? Dang. You know, they tell the story, my buddy Don Mattingly, Joe DiMaggio threw out the first pitch. So I think it was Matt Knowles. And Knowles catches the ball, and he asks Mr. DiMaggio to sign it, man, and he didn't, man. You know, I mean, Don told me that he would sign nothing for nobody at the same. But I heard that he came to see the boss one time, and the boss made him wait like an hour. In dealings with him by the grace of God, of course, where all great things come from. And I want to say, gentlemen, it's so good to be back on the air. Love you guys. Miss you dearly. And Art Russ introduced me to Joe DiMaggio on Old Timers Day. And I'll never forget, I'm standing in front of the locker room after he introduced. He said, Joe, this is Doc Stanley. And Mr. DiMaggio stopped and said, hey, it's very nice to meet you. And what happened was I had a picture taken by Art Russ. I love to get pictures taken by dignitaries and by dignitaries. And I gave it to Barry Helper, who was the vice president of the Yankees at that time, because we had just missed Mr. DiMaggio. And what happened, about 2 weeks later, he said, Doc, I got that picture for you. Let me bring it down. He said, Doc, your picture was the only thing that Joe DiMaggio would sign for anybody on Old Timers Day. And I remember, Dusty, you're going to love this. I'm down ringside at Atlantic City. You didn't come down to this fight for some reason. I forgot what fight it was. I'm sitting next to Bert Sugar. And I mean, you were there. You had to be there. You went to those fights. Anyhow, I get up to do something. I come back, and there's somebody, Ed, Dusty, there's somebody sitting in my seat talking to Bert Sugar. Take a guess who it was, Dusty.
Joe DiMaggio.
You're right. I'm coming back, and Joe DiMaggio is sitting in my seat. And, kick the card, autograph. But, you know, I said all those guys are big boxing fans. You know, I was taken back in his autobiography, his two heroes. Are you ready for this, Ed?
Yeah.
Lou Gehrig and Muhammad Ali. The guy, and dinner with DiMaggio. And this guy was talking about Ali not taking a stand. And Joe said, hey, back off that. You don't judge him about what he does outside his venue. In his venue, he said, Joe, he was as good as me. He was the best. All the outside, you got nothing to do with that. His political stance, you got nothing to do with that. You judge him by what he does in his venue, baseball, field, track, whatever it is. He said, and I found out that his number two guys, one or two, Lou Gehrig, who he played with, and Muhammad Ali. And
wow.
All those guys are big boxing fans. All those big guys are boxing. You know, Joe DiMaggio, you see him at rings. How me and John Michael became. But I saw Michael sitting ringside at Leonard Hearns. The next time I saw him, I said something about boxing, and we've been talking to Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray, it's a Sunday game.
Eddie
Murray. I'll tell you something. Eddie Murray is ambidextrous, and him and Ozzy grew up together. They're friends around California. They grew up together, and I remember he was, it was a Sunday game. And I said, who would like to fight tomorrow? And me and Eddie have been talking ever since. Yeah, Spinks against Tyson, came in the bat. Eddie Murray is the only switcher in the history of baseball, over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and 3,000 base hits. Only one. You only have four guys do it. Mays was the first, Aaron was the second. He was the third, and Rafael Palmeiro was the last one to do it. And we only had four guys in history of baseball with over 3,000 hits, over 500 home runs, and over 500 doubles. And Eddie Murray's on there. Doc Stanley Sports at Block Talk Radio, Treasure Grove Network. It's a Saturday. We're talking some of everything, football, baseball, basketball. Well, not so much basketball. I'm trying to get an interview with Walt Frazier. I thought I had saved that thing. The Knicks are playing some good basketball. Look like they're going to make the playoffs. We're talking about Kansas City. Okay, Ed, coming at you. Can they make it three in a row, Eddie?
I believe so. They just have a knack for doing it. It's a very tough AFC, but they find a way to just get it. I don't know. There are a lot of people I've been talking with complaining about the calls, non-holding calls that didn't go for Frisco and all that. But with that said, I'm bringing up an interesting story because now Taylor Swift and Kelsey, all right, are a big item, okay? Now, is that supporting the NFL, making it more drawing more women to the game, television, or whether it's seating? And now, when you bring up Joe DiMaggio, you know, Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe had a little thing going on. Anybody remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so here we go, all right? So history, here another great and another great franchise, whatever. It's just, to me, it's interesting, but it stimulates the, I guess, the audience, correct? And
well, you see, to capitalize on that, I take every season as a pick'em. They won, they look good, they pulled it out the last second, this, that, and the other. But then you got another season. And you got guys who want to get even. The 49ers were, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, were the favorites to get even for the last two. And they almost pulled it out, but they lost. And so I take every competition in the championship fight, I mean, championship game, as a pick 'em. We'll see if they get past. Because remember, the Kansas City had three or four horrible losses that they should not have lost. And there was
well, yeah, but you know what? If you dissect their loss on Christmas Day, the 14 points that the Raiders had, they got from the offense, not the defense. Mahomes threw an INT, and then there was a fumble.
Yeah.
So there was 14 points that wasn't scored against the defense. And even though it was a loss, that they were truly accountable for because they gave up the 14 points that turned out to be the difference as opposed to the defense giving it up. One of the things that you're bringing up that we got to bring in with football, you know, you always have to look at the aspects of health and injuries, you know. And I remember talking to my man on the Giants, his name was Will Hauling, and he said, you know, it's about eighth, ninth game of the season, and I mentioned something about health. He said, anybody that you can show me right now in pro football that's 100% healthy, yeah, show me. Because, you know, the season just wears on you. It's just a matter of being not too beat down or not having serious injuries at the wrong time. You know, you get your team now, you getting healthy the last two or three games, you're getting your best players back at 100%. Ed's team now with two more wins than you, though, but his team is beat up. They're not as healthy. So, you know, the injuries, the health plays a big part of it. You got to like Kansas City, though, because if they did what they did this year, the tremendous drops, okay, and, you know, let's look at they lost Hill. They weren't supposed to win again. They won again, you know? This is what I want to say, too, Ed and Dusty. I thought that Andy Reid should have let Kelsey play to get the 16 yards he needed for 1,000 yards again. I don't understand that. I think that was bullshit. I don't know if so Kelsey said it or not. Even if he came to me and said, no, you're going to play, get the 16 yards, and that's it. You know, you don't get a chance for that record again. It's like the problem I have, Dusty and Ed, which is taking out a guy who is over the 100 pitch limit, but he's throwing a no-hitter. If I was Kershaw, when David Roberts pulled me out the game after seven innings of perfect no-hit ball, I would have said, I cannot and I will not play for this man again. The status that he has, I cannot and I will not play for this man again. How do you pull a guy out the game who thought a perfect game? No, Melvin Gordon is a perfect example of that bullshit. Melvin Gordon broke the NCAA rushing record. Eddie, Dusty, how long do you think he held that record, Dusty?
I don't have an answer for that.
Just a guess. I mean, he broke the all-time record, rushing NCAA record. Just how long do you think it? A year, 2 years? How long do you think he stood?
Maybe two or three years.
Okay. Eddie, how many years do you think the record stood? Ed?
5 years.
Eddie. Okay,
Five. Good.
Okay, now, understood, I think there was a whole quarter left, and the coach took him out. The record stood, you ready for this, gentlemen? And excuse the terminology, 1 fucking week. It was broken the next week.
Oh.
It was broken the next week. How you take a guy out the game, you know, the same thing now. And people understand this. Yeah, you know, they understand that, okay, Dusty is throwing 103 pitches, but it's fixed, you know, it's the seventh inning now. Just like when the man of Yankees pulled out Severino, was the name. Guys were 7-0 no hit ball, and he pulls them out. And people say, well, you know, you want to stay in for the playoffs. You know, but hey, the guy, you know, it's not like, well, you know, Dusty. He's a 7-0 no hit ball, but he's going to pitch against Chicago in another 2 weeks, and he's going to have a no hitter for 7 innings. I got to take Ed out. Ed's at 103 pitches. You know, it's like, okay, the guy in the World Series analytics, okay, he's got his ace pitcher, his left-handed ace pitcher on the mound, who's giving up 2 hits, walked nobody, struck out 9. The next 3 guys coming up haven't got a hit, but he doesn't want the lineup to see him a third time. And he pulls him out the game, and he lost the World Series. So, I mean, it just, you know, how do you pull a guy out the game that's throwing a no-hitter? I have a problem. I don't want to hear about pitch count. I don't want to hear about facing the lineup 3 times. And how do you take a guy out
who's
throwing a perfect game no-hitter?
You got to understand, Doc, that management – medical management or whoever the pea brains are started doing that to preserve the pitcher's arm.
Okay, now Dusty, stop.
We're
having more Tommy John surgery now than ever before.
Well, this is what I'm trying to tell you. That's what. Yes. But listen, damn it. This is why they turned around and did the Tommy the pitch count to preserve the dude's arm. The guy has a no hitter.
It's not working.
You're arguing something that I'm trying to tell you that's the rationale of what they're doing.
No.
I
agree with you, the rationale. There
hasn't been a 20-game winner in baseball in 55 million years, and they always got with the pitch count. The guy could be winning 20-0. And come down the seventh inning, it's time to take him out because of the Tommy John. And that's a medical bullshit.
Okay. The thing is, you kind of state, but you're not saving these guys' arm. You're having Tommy John surgery. Yeah, huh? You have it more than ever before. I mean, I've even heard stuff about, there's like in the minor leagues, why are guys using metal bats in the minor leagues? And they got to come to the major league and use a wooden bat. And we know that the severity of the possibility of injury because of the aluminum bats. So why are you using aluminum bats in the minor leagues and then you got to use the wood bat in the major leagues?
Well,
doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't have the slider. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. Let me tell you something. Even when I managed, and I was a junior pony manager in Little Leagues and junior pony, upper high school, I was at the high school level. I violated the rules of the bats, and I got rid of them. My team always batted with wooden bats. I said, well, no, you know, the league wants. I said, I don't care what the league says. My kids are not going to bat with wooden bats. To me, that's BS. Because of the way I got away with it. But everybody was complaining. I said, well, hey, I don't want my kids to grow up depending on the freedom. With,
Dusty, you got away with it because you had those pitbulls on the sidelines.
If you study,
you had the crips in the blood of the game. That's why you got away.
No, but listen. If you look at the trajectory of a metal bat against a ball, slow motion, you'll see that when the ball contacts the bat dents and then hits the ball like a catapult. And that's more dangerous than any other time.
No, it's still on. I lowered it. I have pizza in the oven, if you can. Okay, eat your lunch. I'm sorry to bother you.
I don't believe in...
It's going out of my kid.
But they
it's heated. It's heated, yeah.
Baseball commissioner and all that.
Well, I'm fine. The
pitcher. Look at this guy.
Not on you.
Black person in the Yankees, Severino. Tremendous pitcher. The guy's been in so many injury lists, and finally they got rid of him and sent him to the Mets. You hope that the guy could, but he has so many multiple injuries on his arm. I mean, I don't know what they're making today. I don't know what the hell they're doing in the minor leagues. I don't know what the hell they're doing in college and in the other ranks. But these guys are coming in, and they cannot go.
So listen, it's on, and I load it, so it doesn't deafen you. I'm not on mute.
Who's that? Eddie?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
What's up? Okay, yeah. Doc Stanley, sponsored at Blog Talk Radio Network. Rainy day in New York City. Not as cold as it has been, but it was going to get colder again. We're talking baseball, basketball, football. All right. Here's another guy now. I think he's free agent. Ed, we'll get to you. Get to get back, Ed. Odell Beckham. And I heard that he had contemplating to the Jets originally, and I always felt that if he had contemplated going both ways. Yeah, the Jets and the Giants, and I think had the Jets had the quarterback that we have now, had they done the negotiations earlier, with him, I think he might have came. It's interesting to see what happens now. Let's move into, just getting back to you real quick, boxing-wise, the Haney-Garcia fight that you said now. What's happening? What does Canelo have for Cinco de Mayo? Anything that's set for that?
Well, he's contemplating the bigger Charlo, okay? He's contemplating the bigger Charlo, but then David Benavides, who's been chasing him all over Mexico, wants to get the shot. So they're saying that either one of the two is a pick'em who's going to get a shot. But he's leaning towards the Charlo brother because he wants to beat both Charlo brothers. And then maybe he'll contemplate David Benavides.
It's funny you say that because...
But he still wants to get even with that B-Roll, that Korean light heavyweight... that beat him before.
You mean the Russian guy?
The dark horse is the big Charlo brother. That's why when the big Charlo brother won the other day, I said, okay, he's next. But so we don't know what Canelo's doing. Canelo indicated to us in his last press conference that he's going to fight to almost 36 or 37 years of age and then quit. No press, no contest, no nothing. That's his retirement age because he wants to spend time with his family. He's made enough money. He's super rich.
Who's that, Canelo?
Yeah. He's super rich.
Yeah, I find all that spending more time with your family stuff straight up bullshit. Just retire. Come on, in between fights, what are you doing? It's like baseball players tell me, you hear them say, well, you know what? I don't know. I got to sit down. Nobody has it easy than baseball players. You come into a town. Nobody has it easier than baseball players. Okay? You come into a town. Okay? We're going to play the Yankees. So we play a day game on Thursday in Cleveland. We fly to New York. We're in New York on Thursday. Okay? We play a Friday night game, a Saturday night game, a Sunday game. Baseball players are home for all the holidays. they're home for the big holiday. Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, Thanksgiving. And depending on what your team is doing that year, you're going to be home for Memorial Day, 4th of July. You're making zillions of dollars. The family's living with you. Yeah, all this stuff. I want to spend more time. You know, cut the, your family wouldn't mind you spending another 2 years making it. Yeah, I got to talk to the family, spend the time with family. Say, come on, man. The family's with you all the time.
Look, you got to internalize. You got to internalize into an athlete's life. The sacrifice he's in training camp away from his family. Miguel Cotto told me something. He said, look, I've been fighting for years. My kids are growing up. They're graduating. I miss graduation. I miss this. And it's time for me right now, since I'm made enough and I'm solid enough to, like the soldier coming home from a war, I'm finished. And that's what he won. You know, he lost to that.
You're finished because you're finished. I don't want to hear all that about spin. You know, that's the reason why Kobe's not here today. In a lot of ways, you know, using the helicopters. Well, this is time anyway. You know, you will find the time that you want to do what you want to do. Yeah, you know, I hear this all the time. I want to spend my time. I don't buy that. Especially a baseball player.
I don't understand why you don't buy it, because
buy it. That's because your family's with you all year long on your baseball
player. No, they're not.
They're not with you. Half your games are played at home, right?
Oh, you talking about the other game. You're talking about baseball, basketball. Yeah, sure. But boxing is a different story.
Half your games are at home. Now, the season ends in October. All the major holidays, you're home. All the major holidays. You're home for Thanksgiving. You're home for Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. All the major holidays. And as a fighter, I can say, well, hey, man, you know what? I'm not going to fight. I'm going to fight December so-and-so. I'll be home. You know, I spend more time with my family. Come on, man.
You're mixing apples and oranges. Boxing and other sports, a different venue. And I'm trying to tell you, understand? A different venue. You don't bring your family, your kids, your mother, your father, your nephew.
We signed to fight the fight. Okay? I signed today. I'm going to train April and May. I fight in June. After that, I'm done. Especially in today's market, guys ain't fighting like they used to. Guys are fighting once or twice a year, Dusty. They're fighting once or twice a year.
I know that. Mm-hmm. But when you see you mixing baseball and boxing, when you go to training camp, you're locked in like a military camp. No family, no friends, no nothing.
Baseball and basketball and all them other sports.
You have your family.
You're training too much. And that's for you, said to yourself. The guys are not fighting today like they used to.
Why? Because they're not fighting over the weight matches, and that's the change. But when you go to camp for a championship fight, you're in camp 8 to 10, 12, 15 weeks. You're away from family. Now, the same time with baseball or basketball, if you're in your hometown, your family's there. You go home and you come back. But you were talking about that.
You know, that was the thing. Ingemar Johnson used to bring his family with him. Yeah. Okay.
Married to
both sides of that. Hold on a second, Jeff. Let's get another plug in here. Hold on. Don't let it move.
You're listening to Sports and Death on Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. It's Doc Stanley and his Fox, where we rope the rumors, false side issues, and brand the truth. Trust in God.
Okay, gentlemen, we're about ready to close it down. These are closing thoughts. I'm trying to see if I can find any sports things that come up because we talk about before we get off the air. The latest in the world of sports here. See what's going on. Here's a question, too. Going at you first, Ed. Did you have a problem with Lamar Jackson winning MVP?
No, are you addressing me?
All right, so Eddie, okay. Well, you first, Dusty. You had any problem with Lamar Jackson winning MVP?
No, I have no problem. It's just my only question was there were four or five guys who were almost, remember the word, almost on that level, but the top performer was Lamar, you know, Jackson. And, of course, he would have been a no-holds-barred, without question, MVP, which he did become MVP, I mean, if he had won the Super. But the fact of the matter is that there were other guys who maybe played a little better in certain games, but I have no problem with him. The guy is a running back, tight end, wide receiver, quarterback, all in one body.
The only thing he didn't do was play defense.
Yeah.
Ed, okay. Dusty's got his thing. Ed, did you have a problem with Lamar Jackson winning MVP?
No, not really. I think he was, again, misused in that championship game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, he was a running back, the tight end, and the quarterback in that freaking game. I mean, how could you not take away those votes for him?
Okay, gentlemen, hold on just a second.
He blew it.
Marvin Gaye's going to give us a little move. Doc Stanley Sports Net Blog. So get your show, ladies and gentlemen. You're asking where we're at. We're back. Dusty and NFL Ed was here. Hold on a second. Marvin Gaye has this to say before we go on our way here on Sports and Death Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? To save a world in despair? Who really cares? There'll come a time,
there'll come a time,
when the world won't be singing,
when the world won't be singing,
flowers won't grow,
flowers won't grow, no,
bells won't be ringing,
the bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save the world.
To save the world.
That's destined.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
Fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow. Oh,
what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live
for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Oh!
yeah, to save our world, yeah, to save our sweet world, to save our world that is destined to die.
If I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good doctor.
A Rádio Pajeú é o mundo todo. Fala, Stanley, direto dos Estados Unidos.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
Meu nome é Doc Stanley.
E eu moro em Nova York.
Eu moro em Nova York.
Nos Estados Unidos.
Nos Estados Unidos.
E estou ouvindo Radio Web Pajeú.
Estou ouvindo a Rádio Web Pajeú.
Um abraço.
Um abraço.
Hugs. God bless you.
Deus abençoe você.
Eita, menino, quer dizer que agora é internacional, é?
Yes. Ué.
Doc Stanley, sponsored at Blog Talk Radio, a Trust and Terror Network, and the world needs now is love, there's no question about it. Stanley Tarantino in the background, and get ready to close out. In the time of love and affection. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to close it out today on a Saturday, second Saturday of March, and we're going to get some closing thoughts. Starting with you first, Dusty, closing thoughts as we get ready to leave you today on another Saturday, raining in New York City.
Saturday rain. Well, it's good. We covered the gamut of philosophy and ideologies and perception of all sports, and we all, you know, but it's something that, well, I'm glad you asked me that because I'm angry. Angry because of the fact that my first love, boxing, I've been married to boxing since I was 10 years of age. There was an ugly divorce, but we're still in love. I left college to follow a career in the, it was the dream turned into a nightmare, and I turned my back on the Olympics when I could have, not that I was going to be an Olympian, but at least I didn't try because I was turning pro, and my hero, Kid Gavilan, was there, and so I wanted to get involved with it. But my anger is that all sports are covered in the news every time, but there's nothing about boxing. My two mentors, Tim Smith and George Willis, Daily News and the Post, I mean, they were my Bibles. And there was another guy named Wilson for the General American and Katz and Bill Gallo. All them guys were today, you got nothing. They right now, they were covering, at the end of the season, they were covering of who was going to, football, who was going to transport or be signed by the other team, who was going to be released, managers, coaches. The same thing with basketball, baseball, who was going to be traded, this, that, and the other. But there's nothing, nothing. And now the cable, HBO, Showtime, stop boxing. And all you get is the Zone, which is his own cable. I still haven't been able to hook up with it. And Showtime, oh, no, not Showtime, ESPN, ESPN Plus, Bob Arum owns that. So, you know, you don't see that. I'm lucky if I see one ESPN non on the fight. Last week I saw Teofilo Fimo fighting, but I mean that was few and far between. Now I'm hoping that the Devin Haney and Canelo and the Charlo and all them guys are pay per view because that's the only way I can
that's
see them.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, there's nothing about boxing, and that angers me. That angers me and frustrates me. And I don't know what the – oh, yeah, and I remember. I'm glad I remember, Doc. Maybe you might know. But I heard and I read that Ring Magazine is out of business. I said, oh, my God, the Bible of boxing. I remember when I was a rookie, upcoming superstar at that time, I was profiled. I still got the copy of the magazine. And all them stories about boxing. I mean, you went to the newsstand and paid 25 cents at that time and picked up Ring Magazine. You got a whole history worldwide. And then I understand that it's out of business. I said, oh,
you know, you look at it and the Times stopped doing boxing. The News stopped doing boxing. Tim Smith went into a executive position. Our buddy was fired. The only place you can get some boxing redundancy daily is El Diario. You know, it was one of the reasons. John talked about that.
Yeah, and then our great lady fighter, champion, 6-time, 7-time world champ, Amanda Serrano, she's retiring after she makes her 50 fights. She has about 48, 49, and there's no write-up. There's nothing except El Diario. So, you know, this is what hurts me. So, you know, I go to Wikipedia to see what's new. I get some of the press conferences. I missed the Ryan Garcia thing. But that's all I know about boxing. Other than that, there's nothing written.
It's gone, man. It's gone. The boxing fraternity is gone. One of the big things that viral was that Madison Square Garden no longer had a boxing department. I remember.
And Madison Square Garden also got rid of the boxing department, and the Barclays picked it up. Oh, by the way, I forgot to say, I saw the Harlem Globetrotters 2 weeks ago. My son took me over there. It was nostalgic seeing them guys play. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is that there's nothing. There's no Hard Rock Cafe, press conference. There's no nothing.
The boxing people are gone. When I remember I'm talking to Steve Griffith, head of PR of boxing. And he says, "Mel, you know, the guard's not concerned about boxing anymore." And I'm like, "Well, we've got a fight card that night with Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, Tim Witherspoon, and forgot the light heavyweight champion. You had Ray Mercer and the light heavyweight champion. You had 7 champions, former champions." And I said, "Wow." But he's right. You know, the Garden, I think that was the beginning of the end. John Condon told me, you know, the casinos, I can bring Eddie in to the casino. I can fly Eddie and Dusty in, take him to the casino. I have to worry about finding a hotel. We got a hotel here. I ain't got to worry about feeding them. I can feed them here. I ain't got to worry about them training. They can train here. And not to mention during the course of the week, a couple of times we do a little something, they're with the high rollers. You know, when boxing left New York, that was the beginning of the downhill slide, and evidently we can see how much it bothered you. Doc Stanley, supposed to have brought up.
And the ambiance when we used to get together, the clique of us, we used to sit down
talking about that. I got to send you a picture. I remember the great night we had. You're just sitting there, and what was remarkable of you and Lady A and G-Dub and June sitting there, and you knew more about the game than the people downstairs, and that's gone. You know, that was, and Adley said that, you know, yeah, I miss the game, I miss the competition, but I miss hanging out with my teammates, and that was so big, you know, but Eddie, but Dusty too, we lost to Ed Keenan too, Dusty. We lost to Ed Keenan. Ed Keenan.
I saw Kelly Swanson 3 weeks ago. She's involved in Las Vegas somewhere. But Ed Keenan is gone. He's in Vegas.
Ed Keenan was he was our New York guy. More importantly, when we had boxing, Harold Wesson was the matchmaker. You know, we had a fight twice a month in Madison Square Garden. And not only did you have a fight, but you look, there's Mike Tyson, there's Willie Pep, there's Jersey Joe Walker, who was commissioner. The ambiance, the fight. You saw Iran Barkley and Buddy McGirt and Gotti. Barkley, you saw them grow. We saw live.
Juan McCorkey, the first ever Puerto Rican
to win that. Yeah. Hey, we miss it, man. But like I said, it ain't sadly enough. And you say it ain't doggone, it's long gone. Eddie, your closing thoughts, baby.
Well, real quick, gentlemen, how about the Golden Gloves?
God bless you, yes.
I grew up in New York, Queens, and the Golden Gloves, and I was a coach,
very good, got me front row seats to a lot of the events because he and I served on jury duty.
Oh, wow.
We became very good friends, and
that's,
I got invited.
But weren't they talking,
you know,
about? Excuse me, weren't they talking about bringing him back last year and bringing him back? And there was a big, there were articles. I said, "Oh my God, finally he's coming back!" But I haven't heard anything.
And that cowboy, his name was Cowboy, great gentleman, and it was. But that was that to me. That was boxing from the street level or kids level.
Well, you know, Eddie, you bring up a great point. You bring up a great point because you catch, like my first mentor, Dr. Banner, said, when you catch those guys in the Golden Gloves, when they become champions, they remember you because you're there at the Golden Gloves. You're there when they're 2-0. My director of photography, who went to kindergarten with me, Dennis Smith, when Camacho was fighting Ramirez, I stopped and we started talking. When I got through, there was a horde of people around us. But Dennis said, you know what? He was talking to you. Everybody else was listening, but he was talking to you. And I remember I started my boxing by covering the Golden Gloves. You know what I mean? And those guys, they never, it's... Ed, with a tremendous point, man. I mean, you know, they never forget you.
Look, you have the Floyd Pattersons, the Tony Anthonys, the Edson Browns.
That's me. That's right.
Harold Weston. I mean, Chico Vija. Not Vija. Chico Rollins. Camacho. I mean.
What's that guy's name? Hey,
Jesse. Cha-Cha Malave? Malave. Yeah, Malave. You had the Jerry Cooneys. You had of Camilo.
Yeah, everybody, Dusty. Yeah, everybody. And for me, it was so great because I got into boxing. But more important, I got to meet the future champions, and they never forgot you. They appreciated you stopping and talking to them. You know, and Dusty and Eddie, they'll tell you things they won't tell other people because they trust you.
Randy Sandy, Willie Troy, Bobby Shapiro.
Come on, Randy. Man. Hey, listen. Hey, let's go before the tears start to fall, please. Man.
God bless.
Really, man, you just thank God for those opportunities. You thank God for being in New York City, and I thank God for you guys for being part of Sports and Depth. Dr. Stanley, Sports of the Broad Talk Radio, trusted over there, NFL Ed and Dusty, no more to say on a Saturday. It may be raining outside, but the sun is shining here. But there may be some tears of joy and adulation, thankful for God. Man, yeah, you just, the golden, we didn't realize how golden the Golden Gloves was.
Oh, my God. You remember the Intercity and the Eastern Championships? I was in all of them. I mean, the Intercities and, oh, my God, the Boston Nationals, all of that crap, Golden Gloves, and it's gone, man. But anyway, okay, God bless everybody. Take care, man.
You too, sir. All right, gentlemen, God bless, and, can't wait to chat again. All right. Stay well.
Bye.
God bless.
I think
so. Melvin said.
From ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
And with that, we close out our show with our closing theme.
Sports in Depth, talking sports. Sports in Depth with Dr. Emily Stanley Sr. and his renowned sports posse, with members Dusty, NFL Ed, and Jeff Chad Jones, joining Doc on this Saturday segment of Sports in Depth, which is an in-depth, informative look at the world of sports. And a short look at the world of sports on this his renowned and legendary award-winning radio show. That version of both a daily and historical perspective brings also both an in-depth look and perspective not only on sports of our time, but two of the players, performers of the set events now and down. Sports in Depth, also brings us unique strategies and support from an intellectual perspective. Not just a perspective, but a world. Not just legs, because it takes raw God-given talent. In addition, it too takes a God-blessed mind filled with passion, determination, intellect, and belief of competing and accomplishing too. And with the in-depth knowledge and diverse intellect of Dr. Iconic Posse, what's in depth is to the world in depth. Thanks for joining us once again, where we rope the rumors, halt out the issues, and brand the truth. Say before it's too late, not when it is. Take the good for what it is intended and presented for. It is better to be above ground with some problems as opposed to being below ground with none. You're a veteran when you have done it, not when you're doing it. You could become part of the tribe, but not the head of the tribe. Dr. Stanley's words of wisdom and truth, a.k.a. Jesus Luigi's words of wealth. Dr. Stanley, sports in the Block Talk Radio. I trust in God we never. And as an opening, we close in prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for the show. Thank you for health and wealth. Thank you for a debt paid that wasn't made. Thank you for being our God, the one and only true God. Amen. Thank you.
make you feel your life almost gone.
Just look up, tomorrow's sun will let you know your life's not done. Just look around, love's more than down. Trust in God, do-do-do-do. Understands it. By sharing the load we bear, so we must put our trust in God.
Even when we don't understand, and it seems our world falls apart,
just
because tomorrow's sun.
Tonight.
the year for seriously injured.
My guest tonight is a ball player who hustled his way into the record books and became the most prolific hitter baseball has ever seen. From the day his uncle talked the Cincinnati Reds into giving him a shot, Peter Edward Rose defied expectations, eventually setting the all-time record for most at-bats, runs scored, and games played. He's a 17-time All-Star, 3-time World Series champion, and the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history with 4,256 hits. But before he was named league MVP, did you know he learned to switch hits at 9 years old? Was the water boy for his father's football team? Was given the nickname Charlie Hustle by two Yankee greats? Tonight we'll learn what makes this undeniable icon who he is, a man who once said, "I'm just like everybody else. I have two arms, two legs, and 4,000 hits." Please welcome the Hit King, Pete Rose.
Growing up the youngest of four boys means that you never win at anything. Through perseverance and a hatred of losing, it didn't take long for my guest tonight to become one of the most feared Major League hitters of all time. George Howard Brett is a 13-time All-Star, league MVP, and World Series champion. But before he joined the 3,000-hit club, did you know he preferred playing football to baseball? Is responsible for the baseball term the Mendoza line. Was nicknamed Lou by his brothers because he loved Looney Tunes cartoons. Tonight, we'll learn what makes this undeniable icon who he is, a man who once said, "If a tie is like kissing your sister, losing is like kissing your grandmother with her teeth out." Please welcome Hall of Famer George Brett. You always amazed me with your demeanor. If I saw you in a locker room after a game, I didn't know if you were 4-for-4 or 0-for-4 by your demeanor. Where'd that come from?
Going 0-for-4 a lot.
That didn't happen.
Trying to be happy.
That didn't happen very often.
It was more important to me if we won or lost. And it didn't matter if you went 4-for-4 and lost. I probably had the 0-for-4 face on. But if we went 0-for-4 and won, I had a 4-for-4 face on, to be honest with you. Because that's all that matters. You get out there and you do the best you can.
All right, here we go. Salute to Knicks Nation. CP the Franchise here. We have a special edition to Knicks Fan TV because I'm being joined by an absolute legend. He's an NBA Hall of Famer, soon to be 2-time Hall of Famer, led the New York Knicks to 2 NBA championships, and was recently named to the NBA's top 75 greatest players of all time. He is our legend, Walt Clyde Frazier. Clyde, welcome to the Knicks Fan TV. How you doing today?
Yeah, thank you, man. It's always a pleasure talking with you guys.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I'd like to talk about the promotion that you're doing with DoorDash, because it's a pretty cool promotion that you're working on to close out the Knicks season.
Yeah, I am, man. I really appreciate DoorDash hiring me and letting me represent them. And they've done an excellent job. You know, I'm wearing...
Is that really a Donald Trump bobblehead? You're damn right it is.
Walt Frazier coined and is continuing to coin such rhyming phrases as
dishing and swishing, duping and hooping, posting and toasting, using, abusing, and all of those things can be found in this book being reissued. And you think about, we talked about Bill Russell, who did the introduction. Walter Yost, one of the great sports photographers in the history of sports photography, and Ira Burkow, who wrote this book and who helped write this book. You wrote the book, of course, but I'm Walcott Frazier, greatest Nick of all time, two-time NBA champion, one of the 50 greatest players of all time, seven times All-Star, seven times All-NBA defense, MVP in the All-Star game, the first basketball player ever in the Broadcasters Hall of Fame. And I continue to set the trend, one of the best-dressed athletes of all time.
That's my favorite self-introduction of all time.
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm the oldest of nine kids. It was under the oppression of segregation. They were telling me I would never be anything. And my parents were telling me, you can do anything you want, Walt, if you have confidence in a tenacious work ethic. Nothing can deny you. It made my character, though. I had this village that really raised me. I mean, there were...
Walt, for the interview about Tom Brady. Where's your interview about Tom Brady? Oh, shit, I lost the show.
There's a man at my house, he's so big and strong. He goes to work each day and he stays all day long. He comes home each night looking tired and beat. He sits down at the dinner table and has a bite to eat. Never a frown, always a smile, when he says to me, how's my child? I said that I've been studying hard all day. Trying very hard to understand the golden rule. I think I'll color this man father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color him love.
Color him love.
Then I'm gonna color him father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color the man love. Yes, I will.
Color him love.
He says education is the thing if you want to compete. Because without it done, life ain't very sweet. I love this man, and I don't know why, except I'll need his strength until the day that I die. My mother loves him, and I can tell by the way she looks at him when he holds my little sister Nell. I heard her say just the other day that if it hadn't have been for him, she couldn't have found her way. I think I'll color him father.
Color him father.
I'm gonna color him love.
Color him love.
I've got to color him father.
Color him father.
I think I'll color this man love.
Color him love.
Our real old man, he got killed in the war. And she knows she and seven kids couldn't have gotten very far. She says she thought that she could never love again. And then there he stood with that big wide grin. He married my mother and he took us in. And now we belong to the man with that big wide grin. I got to color this man's father.
Color him, father.
I'm gonna color him love.
Color him love.
I've got to color him, father.
Color him, father.
I'm about to color this man love.
Walking down the street,
in
a little old country town,
but we can hand check you. I, can keep my
I saw a rusty penny
half buried in the ground.
It's gotta be so tiring.
As I reached down to pick it up, I saw beneath the rust. These words.
Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Buster Show. Today we have a personal hero and legend in my eyes.
I held
Walt Clyde Frazier, Hall of Famer, NBA champion.
Then
there isn't
suddenly,
much more to say. Everybody already knows you. I appreciate it.
But God, in all his wisdom, would have me say and do. He used this worthless penny to make me understand that life is not worth living without the master's hand.
Oh, in God we trust. In God we trust. We're lost just like this penny unless in God we trust.
And then I heard a still small voice within me whisper, very clear, be still and know that I am God, and I'm always near. When all your dreams come tumbling down around you in the dust, remember this lost hint and place in me your trust.
Oh, in God we trust. In God.
battle, we say we're killing each other, and we just ain't got time for your brother. Oh no.
Stop going to the gym and start using these three natural steroids to accelerate your muscle gain. And joining me now is a man who obviously needs no introduction. He is an indelible image, and his voice is obviously an indelible sound when you think about basketball.
When my life is so cloudy, guide me until I'm sure I open my heart. Oh yeah. My hopes and dreams are fading fast. I'm all burnt out.
with a child's heart. Oh, face the worries of the day with a child's heart. Turn each problem into play. No need to worry. No need to fear. Just being alive makes it all so very clear. With a child's heart, nothing can ever get you down. With a child's heart, you've got no reason to frown. Love is as welcome as a sunny, sunny day. No grown-up thought to lead a heart to play.
Then I go
Lord, he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long, but now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know trying so hard to comprehend.
Don't bother asking how it's possible to love someone like you. It's 'cause you're mine. It's 'cause you're you. It's 'cause I'm love. It's what I. Yeah.